You're listening to Face Off, episode 66, recorded April 26, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
Coming in on Skype this week is me, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so we kind of have a little funny story this week. Mark is coming in via Skype, and barely, actually. We were having some trouble this week. What happened, Mark?
Well, a few days ago, I don't have a traditional mixer. I have a guitar pedal, so it sits on the floor. And I was kind of walking around my office, and I accidentally stepped on the back of it, which is where the USB plugs into. And I didn't think anything of it. I kind of heard a cracking noise, you know, and I probably should have thought of it then. But I kept going, you know, and now, you know, today is the day before we publish this podcast, because we are doing this we normally do it on the weekend at your house. But
yeah.
I had something to do with it that weekend, and I figured everything would be fine. We'll just do, you know, we had all the content prepped up, and we're just going to record and get it all ready. But I tried to plug in the USB, and I bent one of the pins because it was like the little piece got stuck in there and it broke when I stepped on it earlier, and then I didn't realize it, and I tried to plug it back in and bent one of the things. But
that's okay, so, right? Because you found a solution.
I did. So in desperation, I went and found some tinfoil and stuck it in one of the holes and jammed it in there, and it seems to be working.
Oh.
I'm coming in on my nice mic, and I think I sound pretty decent. Well, as far as Skype goes, anyways.
Ah, the magic of tinfoil. All right, so let's get into we have another news and follow-up. Actually, in episode 6, we talked about an app called Etherpad, which was a super collaborative real-time text editing application, which actually in episode 46 we talked about it got bought by Google and they released the source. And but we were kind of bummed because they're shutting down etherpad.net, I think was the site. But that's okay, because now someone has taken up the source code and put a version out there for all of us to use.
Yeah, so Google kind of opened the source, but they took the main site down. But now somebody said, you know, let's put the site back up, because, you know, it was a nice app. We used it for show notes for a long time.
Yeah, it was really good. And now if you go to titanpad.com, you can use the Etherpad application. I'm assuming it comes straight from the source that was released, and use it just like you used to, which makes us happy.
I mean, their motto is like, we are rescuing Etherpad for your use. It's like bringing back the old Etherpad.
Yeah, we liked it. Good app. Because you find, and actually I've heard that there's some new Google Docs updates coming out that will do, which doesn't surprise me. It'll do a lot of things like Etherpad did to make it super real-time. Because currently with Google Docs, with the documents, if you're typing up a document, you kind of sometimes it's not hyper-collaborative. It is in the fact that you can make changes and go back through versions. But sometimes if two people are editing the same doc at the same time, it gets a little funky with what it tries to do.
Yeah, even when we're editing show notes in the same room, it's kind of like, oh, I'll get that. And you're like, oh, I was already doing it. And we kind of have a little conflict there.
And but, then it kind of like it tries to catch up and figure out what you really actually wanted. And my stuff gets deleted. And but I've actually heard in the new I could have swore I saw a blog post, and I can't find it right now, but that there was a post about how Google Docs is trying to do more of this sort of real-time collaborative stuff. And probably the way that went down was they probably took the Etherpad team and moved them over to Google Docs and had them kind of talk about the stuff that they were doing. So that's really good. Really liked Etherpad. You know, maybe we might use TitanPad for the show notes again or something, because that's cool that these guys are trying to save that service, because we liked it a lot.
Well, that, and you got to give credit to Google for actually open source, you know, making the code open source, so somebody could, you know, take it and just make another one.
I totally agree. All right, let's get into our geek tool of the week. One thing that we geeks tend to do, and I actually found this out because I was working on one of my vehicles this weekend, which is always super fun. I'm not very good at it. I wish I was better, but actually, you know, working on vehicles, to sort of take a tangent here, I didn't like it a lot, but, you know, the more I work with computers, the more I kind of like working with vehicles, because you often have a very obvious goal, which you don't always get with software development. Like, this weekend it was like, okay, get truck running. You know, my truck wasn't running. Get truck running. I worked and I worked and I worked. And this is like at 11 o'clock at night because I'm a night owl. And I'm working and working. And all of a sudden, truck starts up. Done. Yes. You know, mission accomplished. And but in doing that, the one thing I did realize that I had that other people might want, and that's why I threw in the Geek Tool, was an LED flashlight. So I have just sort of a battery-powered LED flashlight. I think it has like 16 LED bulbs in it. It's really bright, really useful. But the problem with a lot of these is sometimes, like, you know, I wouldn't leave it in the glove box of my vehicle because batteries, they either start to corrode or they die after a while. And so that's why our Geek Tool of the Week is a hand-powered 3-LED flashlight. And it's only $6.95 from Amazon. You get the link to it in our show notes. You know, $7, really cheap. And what it does is instead of, you know, running off just traditional, like, AA batteries you put in, is you can – it has rechargeable batteries in it that you can charge via a hand crank. But it's actually not really a crank. It's a squeeze action. So it has sort of a handle on the side that pops out, and you kind of squeeze it to kind of, you know, spin the motors to charge it up. And then you have a 3-LED flashlight that, you know, you don't have to worry about batteries dying, and you can leave in your glove box, and, you know, when you need it, you just kind of, you know, give it a couple cranks, and you have a nice flashlight.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, grab one, stick it in your drawer. Next time you have to go unplug cables, you know, grab that, go underneath your desk, and go searching.
Well, another one I was going to talk about instead, what kind of got me on this tangent, was there's some out there. And actually, we'll link to them in the show notes, too, because they are pretty useful, except for they have a problem. There's these ones out there that you actually stick the flashlight into the cigarette lighter or the power adapter in your car. So, and they sit there in your thing, and they kind of charge, and when you need them, you can pop them out, and then you have sort of this rechargeable little LED flashlight. But the problem with the ones I saw on Amazon, why I wouldn't, you know, super recommend people go out and getting them without doing a little research, is apparently cars have different sized like power things, like cigarette lighter. Mm-hmm. These started because they were lighters for cigarettes, and you'd put the little thing and you pop it down, it pop out, and it'd be really warm. You light your cigarette. But any more modern cars just have them so that you can plug in your sort of DC converter for things like your phone or your laptop. Mm-hmm. But the problem with these, there was some reviews online that were negative. They said that they didn't fit in some cars. So I didn't want to do those as a as the Geek Tool, because I couldn't fully recommend it because it might not fit in your car. But if you just look at the Amazon reviews, I'm sure you should be able to figure out whether or not they'll fit in your vehicle or not. But they're cool too. We'll put the link for those in the show notes as well, so you can get one of those if you want, because they're both really cool. And geeks, you know, we need lights. We're always sticking our faces in a computer case or, you know, anywhere that doesn't have light. So a flashlight is always a good thing to have.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get into our web apps this week. The first web app I want to talk about is called PDF Crowd. And this is just a cool little web app that lets you take HTML and make a PDF out of it, which is oftentimes, I've played with a couple PDF creators in Ruby, and they never really work kind of the way you want them to. They always tend to be more difficult. And I always just thought, God, I just want something that takes HTML and spits it into a PDF for you. And that's what PDF Crowd does for you.
Yeah, they have is CNN.com. You don't even have to actually like upload the HTML. You can just give it a URL and it goes and does it.
Yeah, so it's really cool. It has all kinds of options for your PDF document. Like, what do you want the page width to be? The margins. You can encrypt it with a password if you want. You can set layouts, or you can set flags like you can't print it, or you can't modify it or copy it. But it really, the crux is you can either give it a URL that will make it into a PDF, you can upload HTML that will turn it into a PDF, or you could, you know, they can just give you a text box and you can type up your own HTML to put into a PDF for you. The other thing that makes me really like this is you can sign up and get an API key, and they have libraries for a bunch of really popular things, Python, Ruby, Java, C#, and just from the shell if you want. And you can use those in your applications with the API to send it HTML, and it'll give you a link back for your PDF.
Is there any charges for that?
You know,
I would imagine maybe you get a couple free ones or something.
Well,
or?
It's in beta right now, so I can't find anything about charging. I assume eventually they might charge for it. What I would hope would be really cool is if they release the technology that they use to make the HTML render it to a PDF to make it easier for us. But until then, like, this is a service that if I had a customer that really needed to, that wanted PDFs and I just wanted to do it really quick and dirty, this is something you could pay for either, you know, as a monthly rate or on a per PDF basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some open source implementations where you can actually include, you know, libraries and things, but they don't always work that great. And this one seems to do pretty decent.
Yeah, which is really good. So use it if you want to try it out. Right now, like I said, I can't find anything that makes you want to pay or that makes you pay. So you can try it, get the API, get an API key, get their library, and you can give it a shot. The next web app we want to talk about is called Manpax, and you can get it by going to manpax.com. This is a really interesting concept. Mark and I have been talking about it for a little bit today because we're both really excited to sign up for it. And it's really what it does is you can sign up for like a subscription basis to receive a man pack, which there's different packs you can pick. But really what they are at the heart is you can get, you know, monthly or it's every 3 months, I believe. You can get orders of, you know, a couple pairs of underwear, a couple pairs of socks, and a couple T-shirts or, you know, any variation of that theme based on the different packs they have.
So so girlfriend approved, it says, man pack, stay fresh, stay clean. So, you know, you just get shirts, socks, and underwear in the mail every 3 months.
Right. So, I mean, I'm married, so it doesn't really matter. She doesn't care anymore, right? I already got her to sign on the dotted line. But like you, Mark, you're a bachelor. So really, you know, clean underwear and clean socks and clean undershirts, those are important things to have, you know, fresh ones of, because when they're not fresh, it's not something you want to have lying around, right?
Well, that and I live in a small town, and there's no department stores, there's no Walmarts. I'd have to go to Butte or Bozeman. I'm in one of those cities pretty much every weekend, but still, I don't know. It's the surprise factor, like to just, oh, I got new socks today. You just like throw some old ones away or something. Well, sounds pretty cool.
I don't know about you, but I'm terrible about shopping for like socks and underwear. I'm really bad about it. So I was looking, I think the two timer pack is perfect for me. You get two pairs of underwear and two pairs of socks every 3 months, and it's $15 for that. And they send you a notification before they send you a new man pack, so that if you want to change your order, you can cancel any time. But like for me, I mean, what I do is I basically wear out my socks and my underwear until they're almost unusable, and then go buy some. And this is a good way to keep sort of a steady stream. Like you can't go buy, you know, a two pack of underwear that I've found anyways. And you definitely, you know, you can't buy a two pack of socks or, you know, a pack with two pairs of socks in it. And this is, I think, sort of their way of like, you know, getting large bulk of it and sort of distributing it out at a good price for people. And then you just have, you know, a couple extra pairs of socks or underwear or whatever every 3 months. And, you know, you're keeping it nice and clean and good and fresh.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of things that just make life easier. That takes it off your mind. You don't even have to think about, oh, yeah, I'm running, you know, my socks are getting kind of old. I better go get new ones or whatever. This is just kind of replenishing your supply over time. So you're always having, like, fresh socks.
Right, and there's just some things that are always really nice to have, right? Like, fresh socks always feel really good. They're nice and cushy, but I don't think about that until I actually get new socks. So I'm wearing old socks that are mangy and they have no cushion left, and I don't even really notice it until then. I'm like, all right, well, they got holes in them. I better go buy some new socks. And then I buy new socks for like the next week. I'm like, oh, gosh, these socks are so soft and comfortable. I love them.
Every time I get like a new pack of socks, I'm always like, man, if I was a millionaire, I would buy new socks every day.
Yeah. What are they going to come out with? Disposable socks. Well, this is kind of a way to do that. And at a price, I think is, you know, I did you end up checking the prices on these sort of compared to like, you know, per pair of underwear?
Well, no. You but know, I usually, I don't know.
I guess I haven't
six or something. You know? Like I said, I'm always like running out and have holes in them. Then I like just throw all my socks away and get brand new ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this is a way to have, you know, on average, pretty fresh socks around. If you just remember to throw a couple of your old mangy, or you just don't even think about it. When you notice there's holes in your underwear or holes in your socks, just throw them away. Because that's, I don't ever do that. You know, I'm like, these got a couple weeks left in them. And then
this would be a great present for someone going to college too.
Oh, totally. That's a great that's a great point, because you can buy gift certificates, like a year long subscription for someone or something like that. They also have different types, so like different brands, I guess would be the correct word. By default, they use Hanes, which I don't know if you know, but the Hanes Comfort Soft boxer briefs are my favorite pair of underwear. So this is perfect for me. But you can also, for, you know, $10 more a pack, you can switch up all of your stuff to be like Champion brand, which, you know, obviously is a lot nicer brand. With the undershirts, the T-shirts, you can pick like Ribbed Tee or Champion or American Apparel if you want, for just, you know, an extra charge per pack. So they do have a couple different brands, but like for me, I mean, all I want is just these sort of generic generic Hanes boxer briefs and some, you know, black crew socks. That's all I buy. And, you know, I can get two pairs of those every 3 months for a good price. And I think this is a great idea. Like I was talking today or the other day about how online grocery shopping is really big in the UK. Like people hardly ever go to the grocery store in the UK anymore. And it's so funny that it hasn't taken on here. But this is sort of, you know, kind of one of those things that is like that I really like.
You know, I think maybe it hasn't gone, you know, taken off here is because they tried like everything in the 90s and it all failed.
Yeah, and I mean,
you know, when the internet
UK
was first
is
starting,
just
but,
a lot more dense. But things like the whole country is more dense than the United States. And I think you know, the price point hasn't really caught up yet or just our culture
logistics
hasn't.
And
yeah. I don't know. I would like groceries from the internet.
There goes
the
Skype delay.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I like these types of things, like getting things like this over the internet. I like to see more of that instead of just getting electronics or, you know, gadgets online.
Yeah, me too.
Perishables. And
I think that market's going to definitely get a little more, it's probably going to get a little bit bigger and hopefully explode some more in the next couple of years because it is working elsewhere in the world. And I like the subscription model. It's you need underwear, you need socks. If I looked at my, you know, my buying habits, I probably end up getting if I could distribute it to probably, you know, two pairs of underwear, two pairs of socks every 3 months, because I probably get a 12 pack every, you know, year. And this would be a way to kind of keep it fresh and going on throughout the year. And I think it's a great idea and I love it.
The best part, you don't even have to think about it. They just show up.
Exactly. I just think it'd be awesome to come home and be like, oh, my man pack is here. Go open it up and see my fresh new pair of underwear and socks and T-shirts. It'll make you happy. All right, if you have some news, a follow-up, or web application you want us to check out, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can tweet us out or send us an email or give us a phone call. We'd love to hear from you guys. We've gotten some great ideas for show topics from you guys. So keep letting us hear back from you. We appreciate it. Let's get into our topic this week. Oh, see, this is Skype. It's a killer.
All right, so we're going to get into the topic this week, which is file transfer. Kind of this FTP, getting files moved around.
Yeah, that's a big part of any developer, and a lot of developers that, you know, are just sort of getting into the web stuff and haven't been doing it. You know, you and I, we've been doing it for a long time, so we've set up some pretty automated processes that we'll talk about some things that we have done. But, I mean, a lot of just your web developers out there, they just, you know, they have to get their files up to a server somehow, and there is a couple different ways to do it.
Yeah. So the first way to do it, which is probably the most familiar, like you said, is FTP, which is File Transfer Protocol. It's just as old as dirt, as old as the internet. The first RFC for it, the release for comments, was in 1971. So this is like the birth of the internet. FTP was around.
Yeah.
They understood quickly that they needed, you know, a way to move files up and down from servers. So.
Right. That makes sense, right? Because it's the sharing of information was part of it, but also that for that information, you have to be able to share files and you have to be able to move them around and get them around. So it makes sense that this was one of the really early, you know, protocols we saw on the internet.
Since it was early and they didn't really understand, you know, what the internet was going to eventually become and what basically, you know, what the kind of attacks were going to come out, they didn't have any encryption built into the protocol. So FTP is actually pretty insecure in the fact that all your passwords and even the code and things that you're transferring up and down from the FTP are completely sniffable.
So, I mean, we've talked about in the past that email is also equally insecure, right?
True.
Don't put anything in email you wouldn't write on a this example you gave me was don't write anything on an email you wouldn't put on a postcard and send through the mail. Because it's just as easily traceable. And the same goes for FTP. I mean, if you're using FTP and you're not using some of the other things we're going to talk about, just straight FTP, you have to think about that. Like, what are you transferring? What password are you sending to authenticate to this server? Is it your password you're using elsewhere? Is it, you know, and you're going to want to think about that because it's just going out there straight clear text.
Yeah, I mean, if it's your own personal site, it might not, you know, be the end of the world. But if it's like proprietary business software that you're moving around, you might want to think about some of those attack vectors and that it is kind of insecure. Right. And there's some alternatives that we're going to talk about. For one, there's FTPS, which is FTP over SSL. So you kind of get the same amount of encryption that you would when you're, you know, putting your username and password into a bank website.
Right.
And it's basically the same FTP protocol, just has the SSL built in. A lot of browsers support this, so you don't have to do anything special. The server, I mean, does have to support FTPS, and you might have to have a certificate, but...
So, like, just like with HTTP, how we can go to an HTTP website and all of that is in the clear, unencrypted across the internet. You know, and when we want to do something special, we go to HTTPS. FTPS is sort of the same thing.
Right. And then another one is SFTP, not to be confused, is a SSH extension for FTP. So this is kind of using the SSH type encryption with the FTP protocol. From my understanding, it's not just like a tunnel. You're not just tunneling the FTP protocol as okay. It was before over SSH. It's an actual extension to SSH, but it does use the SSH protocol. Okay. And we're going to talk about some clients that use FTPS and SFTP.
Can you
then another one?
Oh, can I ask a question? Can you with SFTP? Oh man, I forgot what question I was going to ask now.
I was reading the Wikipedia article, and I always thought that SFTP was just SSH, but it was an FTP running through SSH, which would be a tunnel. But I guess it's not, and there's some technical reasons why it's kind of difficult to do that.
So can you only SFTP? This is a question I was going to ask. Can you only SFTP into like Unix boxes that have SSH?
I don't know.
Okay, because I wonder if like a Windows server, if you're SSHing to that, if it's even possible. It probably depends upon the FTP server, right? Because it, you know, because if it has it has built-in extensions for SSH installed, then it could probably do SFTP, which probably doesn't matter which operating system it's on.
Right. I think it's you have to have SSH, and then your FTP server also has to be able to talk to SSH, but it contains its own extension for SFTP. But I'm not quite sure on that.
Okay.
I do know that it uses the SSH extension, so it is encrypted. You don't have that same problem as you do with just regular FTP. Then another one is SCopy, which is for people in the Unix and Linux kind of world, they kind of get familiar with that command. Basically, it's just a way to copy a single file or an entire directory or whatever over SSH without FTP or anything.
Okay.
The kind of downside to SCopy is you do need to know what file you're copying ahead of time, like the exact path.
Right.
There's no like kind of browse around kind of directory with that.
So like
you get with FTP.
When I'm on my Linux box and I'm SCPing something, that's what I've always heard is SCP, right? But it's called SCopy.
It's secure copy is what it's supposed to stand for.
Okay. So on my Linux box I always do SCP and then the file that I want to transfer. And then wherever I want to transfer, I always, unless I am really sure of the path, I always end up just, you know, telling it to secure copy it into my home directory. And then I have to SSH back into the other box and then copy it to where I want it because that is kind of a pain.
Yeah, I usually have like another terminal open SSH to see what file I want to get. And then once I know what I want to get, then I go to my local box and then do the SCopy or secure copy.
So you're doing, but it goes both ways. So you're talking, it sounds like you're talking more of like pulling it from another server, whereas I usually push to another server.
I see. Well, I usually don't do the pushing because I'm usually trying to pull it from a server to my local, or sometimes I'm doing local to the server.
Oh, yeah.
But my local doesn't have like a public IP address most of the time, and so I'm usually pulling down to my own computer.
Okay. So yeah, and that is one cool thing. Again, with it's all, you know, usually command line. There's a couple clients that will do it non-command line, but it's, you know, it'll go both ways. Like I can, you know, say I have this file on my local computer, I want to put it to this remote one, or I could say I grab this remote file and put it to this location on my local one, you know, it's pretty flexible, kind of like most Unix commands are.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about a little bit later WinSCP. It's a client, and it actually will give you kind of a directory listing of stuff.
Right, yeah.
It's got some ways to do that.
It basically makes it just like FTP. Well, we'll get to that later. Let's go on to the next.
So the next one, and this is one of my favorite ways to file transfer, is rsync. This is a protocol. Well, I'm not sure if it's an actual protocol. It's a program. It's a Unix utility,
right,
that's super efficient. I mean, this thing is used to do file transfers for things that you're literally paying for by the byte, like Amazon S3 transfers or something, where you don't want to waste any bandwidth.
Right.
So the way rsync works is it transfers only the actual bytes that are missing. So you could think of it as almost like a version control or something. Like if you're working in a document and for a web developer, you're working on some HTML and you modify some parts in the file. With FTP, you'd normally just to upload the entire file, and it would replace the one that's on the server. With this, it would literally say, oh, what's been changed since the last time? And it would just transfer those bytes that are needed to change it.
So rsync sort of asks like, hey, this is what I have. What do you have? You know, it asks the sort of remote one. The remote one says, oh, I have this. And it says, oh, okay, so I know it transfers the delta, which is the change. You know, so it's like, oh, I only need to shoot these chunks up because those are what have changed.
Exactly. So it's, and that's where the name kind of sync is, and then the R is kind of remote sync.
Okay, and so like it's really good for like web projects because you can so actually I think you're right. Rsync, I don't think, is a protocol. I think rsync will go over most of these protocols we talked. I think you can do rsync over like SSH and over SFTP. I'm not sure.
Rsync does have its own port, and you can actually have like an rsync server, but the way I usually use it is just through SSH.
Right. And then so like a lot of times what you'll do is, you know, you'll rsync just your whole project folder. You'll work and you'll make changes, and then you're like, all right, well, rsync up to this remote server, and it'll look for all the differences and send up only the things that it has to, and it's a pretty clean way to do it, and a pretty good way to keep, you know, those projects synced from your local to your remote folder.
Yeah, I mean, think about if you had FTP, you would have to delete the entire directory and then and then upload the entire directory again. I mean, that might take a long time. Whereas rsync, you could do a whole rsync of an entire directory, and then you could run that command again a minute later, and the second time it wouldn't even do anything because it would say, "Oh, you're all synced up."
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a lot more efficient, and it's one of my favorite ways to do backups as well. So it's a good one to check out. There's another one that kind of uses the same principles as rsync called duplicity. And I wanted to mention it because it has the efficiency of rsync, but it also is able to do encrypted files. Yeah. And that's one of the things. So like rsync struggles with encrypted files because when you do encryption, you know, by definition, you're trying to randomize everything.
Right.
And duplicity kind of solves that problem, and it allows you to rsync like encrypted files. The way it's able to do it, it's pretty technical, but it stores some things on your local computer in order to calculate the changes instead of – it does things a little bit differently. But if you're doing remote backups, duplicity is pretty cool.
Yeah, we actually we both have Drobos, and we were kind of backing up to each other's computer to our Drobos for a while because, you know, that was kind of a cheap way for us to get some cheap backups out of each other. But we also were kind of like, well, I don't want you sniffing around my files – you know, because you're the system administrator of the computer I'm sending to. So, you know, permissions don't help because you can get in there if you want. But with, you know, so we ended up doing duplicity because then it would encrypt it all and then sync between it. And, you know, we really only wanted it to transfer what had changed because we were doing backups. Backups are really big. And we wanted them encrypted so that we, you know, we couldn't sniff around in each other's files just because, you know, we felt like that would be the best way to do it. And duplicity did a great job for it. We were really happy
Definitely.
With it.
Another one is WebDAV, which is basically just HTTP, you know, it's an HTTP extension. It just allows you to upload files via HTTP. I haven't used it a whole lot, but a lot of web developers do use it. Do you guys use it at all?
I mean, not much. It's usually sort of just like the really quick and dirty way to get authentication up. So WebDAV is sort of the thing that you use when you want to do sort of like server-side password protection on a folder or a website. And usually, you know, if you're using Apache, you go into the htaccess and you set up WebDAV and you sort of set up the username and password. I never really liked it at all, but it is sort of a quick and dirty way to do it. Like if you already have Apache, A lot of people use it just because I think because it's there. I hope not by choice, just because I'm not sure. I'm not sure if WebDAV does any encryption or anything like that.
Well, WebDAV can run through HTTPS, right. So it would use SSL. Another feature that WebDAV has is it can lock files, which depending on your workflow, I wouldn't like it, but depending on your workflow, it could be nice if you have multiple developers and you didn't want somebody overwriting your files.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a locking mechanism.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, so I'm working and I'm trying to use these ways to transfer files that we talked about. But, you know, like we talked about SCP and, you know, I'm not good at the command line. And I know that you can use FTP and stuff from the command line, you know, but what are some of the good clients out there that I can use to do some of these things that make it easier for me?
Well, a great one is FileZilla. This is for Linux, Mac, and Windows. I've used it on probably all those, well, except Mac. I don't have a Mac, but it works for FTP, FTPS, and SFTP. Another one is WinSCP, which does the same, except it also does secure copy. So you could have like an SSH server and use WinSCP.
Right. So I think, I don't know, what I found in experience is that most if you have SSH access, you can usually use SFTP. I don't think I've ever come into contact with a server where it had SSH and I couldn't use SFTP.
Okay.
But sometimes, like for you, if you specifically only want to do SCP, you know, you only want to use that protocol. WinSCP is really good. It's Windows only, but it's really good at doing just SCP stuff. Like you were talking about, it really makes it look and feel just like FTP, only you're doing mm-hmm. it over SCP, so it's a good way to transfer those files.
Yeah, how it does, it kind of mixes SSH and then the scopy command together. So it'll do like SSH right. and do a list command to see what files are available, and then it'll say, oh, here's the files that you have available. You'll click on them, and then it will run the scopy command, which yeah. just copies the file down.
Yeah, but I think kind of works. Like I've just been a fan of FileZilla for a long time. It's free, open source. It does, you know, I've never really had a server that I couldn't upload files up to it for, and it works on all platforms. We use it to upload FaceOff. Pretty good app, and I'm kind of a fan of it.
So let's now talk a little bit about workflow. So as a web developer, we're trying to get these files onto the server. You know, back in the early day, I remember I was always pretty much working on a live server, or I was working on like a subdomain. I would call it like sandbox.theactualdomain.com, you know, and it would be a mirror site, and I would work on it live, just because I didn't have like, you know, a Linux box sitting there, or I didn't have like with Ruby, you didn't have like a web server that just started, or,
right.
or I didn't use LAMP, WAMP, the Windows, LAMP. Setup, mm-hmm. and so I was always I didn't know any better, and I always thought that the server is where you did your programming, and so I had always just FTP my files up all the time,
right? Which is okay as long as you're using some form of encrypted FTP.
Well, yeah, I mean it's okay, but it can be a little bit slow though. You know, I think it's silly looking back, you know, because I'd be doing some work, and then I'd hit save, and then I'd be like, oh, now I got to see what the changes are.
Right.
I'd have to drag the file over and upload it up. So that was like my first iteration of my workflow. I'd copy the file over and then refresh the page, and it was like, okay, now I got to do some more work.
Right.
Then it got to the point where I'd actually figured out how to get my text editor to, when I hit Control S or to save, it would automatically FTP, you know?
Yeah.
And that helped. It got a little bit faster and so on. But then I found...
Well, if I can interject real quick.
Go ahead.
And there's a lot of developers out there doing that. I mean, I've seen a lot of developers, people I know that were good developers that, you know, a lot of times they put their heart and mind into their programming and not so much their workflow. And that's just a terrible, terrible workflow. I mean, I've seen people using Dreamweaver who edit the file, and then just like you said, they go over to their little site in Dreamweaver and put the site up, and then you have to wait for all the transfers, and it just those little milliseconds of time can really inch up. So if you notice that you're using file transfer a lot, because like I'll admit I don't use file transfer a lot anymore, I don't have traditional files installed. Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm usually developing locally. I do all my development, all my testing locally, and then once I hit a version or something, I mean, if I'm using version control, we'll talk about that workflow in a second. It makes it really easy. But if I'm not using version control, it's I do all my, you know, my work locally on a local server on my computer, and then, you know, once I get to a stable point, then I do file transfer usually through, you know, SCP or SFTP. And that's a much better workflow than saving and uploading after every save, trying to guess your code right, uploading it, seeing it's broken, having to fix it, re-upload it. That's just a lot of wasted time that adds up over time.
So the ideal way to do it would be to work locally, like you said, and then some of these tools like Capistrano will, you can kind of stitch together these tools that automatically deploy your site when you're ready.
Yeah.
So Capistrano, you could set it up to actually S-copy your entire directory up to whatever server it is. Maybe it's a staging server. Maybe it's the actual production server. So
Capistrano is really cool, too, because not only does it uses whatever sort of file transfer mechanism you want, but it does other stuff that you need for deployments. Like when you're doing Rails development, Capistrano will upload the file, or if you're using file control, you know, it'll pull from your source control. And then it'll do things like do a rakeDB migrate, and then, you know, any other sort of little tricky things you need to do on that system before it'll run. So instead of having to upload it, SSH into that server, do all the stuff, you know, it's sort of like a scripting language that takes care of all of that stuff for you. So you work and you work and you work, and then you say cap deploy, and it goes, all right, I know what to do. I know to move the files up here. I need to do a rakeDB migrate. I know this is passenger running, so I need to touch tmp restart.txt, and, you know, it does all that funky stuff for you.
Yeah, and that way you don't have, like, you're not working on a live site, you know, and you accidentally screw up some CSS and the page goes all wonky, and you're like, I better fix this real fast, and you're struggling, you know, scurrying to get it done, and you just work locally, and then once you have all the changes, you just push them all up all at once, and so nobody really knows that you were working on it.
Right.
The Python version of Capistrano is called Fabric. Basically does the same thing. And it should be mentioned, you know, that you can use Capistrano on a PHP project, even though it's written in Ruby. It's totally, you know, it just uses utilities like scopy, rsync, those kind of things.
It uses just system things, and Ruby is as hard as just another scripting language that you can run on any system that has Ruby installed. I think the ideal way, and things like Capistrano and Fabric use it, is, you know, to really properly use your version control. So, like, our workflow is we use Git or HG, and we work locally, but then we have something like Bitbucket or GitHub that we push up to, which is sort of a, you know, a centralized server that people can get a hold of. We push our changes up to that, and then something like Capistrano or Fabric can go and it just goes on the server and pulls those changes down. So it does all of those, like, you know, I think like Git uses just goes over SSH, or you can have it go over HTTP and HTTPS if you want to make those encrypted. And that's a really good workflow. Is you're using version control, you're managing your source, and then you're using, you know, something like SFTP or SCP or even FTPS to have a tool like Capistrano or Fabric pull those files and do its deployment for you.
Yeah, so I mean, your production server can just sit there and say, oh, is there any changes? Any changes? Oh, yes, no. And some people even go as far as to have, like, staging servers where the site has to be up and running in, like, a beta mode in this other, like, sandbox mode, you know, for like a week before they actually move it to production and let people play with it.
Yeah, I mean, how many developers have you seen where they have, like, that sandbox and then their production server, but, you know, they'll upload it up to the sandbox server, they'll FTP their files up, and then, you know, someone's like, oh, we need to change this, so they go on to the sandbox server, make the changes locally on the sandbox server, and then after a while, you're kind of trying to figure out, like, oh, how do I get the files locally and then up to the production, and which one's the newest with that change, and files get lost, and it's just a big, hairy mess.
The great thing about version control, we talked about a few episodes back, so definitely check that out. But it gets rid of all that, like, dot backup and the date files, you know, like, this is index.php dot, you know, January 1st.
Right. So I guess let's get to let's wrap it up real quick. We're getting near our time. Don't use plain FTP if you have anything sensitive at all, right? That's the big lesson here.
Well, that, and it's kind of a, like you said, you're losing a couple minutes every Well, I mean, you're probably losing an hour a day using FTP, just copying and dragging and dragging and dragging and dragging all day. So
make sure you're using, I mean, when you are transferring files, make sure you use something that's encrypted so that you don't have your stuff flying out in cyberspace. There's some really cool tools out there like rsync or Capistrano and Fabric that can really help you manage that workflow a little bit better. And you know, try and explore these tools, use them, let us know what you think. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. We always appreciate it. Thanks, guys. We will see you next week.